60s. Europe, in an area the geographic equivalent of this state, has 50 times more cleanup capacity than Alaska has right now. The current industry standard of 250,000 barrels is not acceptable to the Oil Reform Alliance. We ask that industry assume a greater share of the inherent risk associated with transportation and production of oil, as they have done in other parts of the world, rather than push this risk off on the public. We want equipment stockpiled for discharge of total contents, and we want manpower trained for immediate response. The oil industry may call it redundancy, but the public calls it safety. After all this, I forgot to give you my, I have to back up this copies of the Scottish Eye documentary, and I'll give you one right after my testimony. I gave some to the other committee members before they left. And I also have some information from Dan Lawn, who works for DEC, on trip comparisons, on his trip report to Norway and Scotland, and on comparisons to how the industry operates there, and I'll pass those out. In Section 2504, proof of financial responsibility, we agree should be evaluated on the and based on the size of the operation, with limits increased for the larger operators to the maximum allowed by the state. This is not an unreasonable request. Last September, fishermen held a marine demonstration in front of the Alyeska facility, protesting Amirata Hess's charters of Liberian-flagged, Israeli-registered, and Italian-crewed tankers, which were up to 50% larger than the Exxon Valdez. We demanded a $1 billion bond for these boats, and Amirata Hess complied, and Amirata Hess is one of the minor operators of Alyeska and the pipeline, 1.5%. Surely if Amirata Hess can do it, the others can also. In Section 4, that's DEC inspection. The fleet carrying North Slope crude accounts for 13% of the U.S. tanker fleet, but this same 13% accounts for 52% of the structural failures in this fleet. Clearly, there is something very wrong with federal inspection programs. Until such time as the federal government strengthens its Coast Guard inspection program, the Oil Reform Alliance strongly supports the state oversight in this area. DEC should be provided with the ways and means to contract experts to perform the inspections. They're not experts, but neither is the Coast Guard right now. Last night, the oil industry testified strongly in favor of prevention. Everyone agreed that prevention is the key, and we heard many ideas for preventing primarily marine oil spills. Real prevention in this area starts with improving the quality of the fleet plying Alaskan waters. But we can't ignore the land spills, and I'm almost done, and so is my voice. And I have a copy for you of the Anchorage Daily News article on pipeline corrosion, and to show that this isn't a concern that can't be ignored. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ricky. Marnie Schwartz. And Ricky, I'd also like to have the numbers you gave, the percentages you gave on 13% of the American fleet, and I don't have the percentage you gave on structural failures, 52.
If it's all right with you, I'll provide a written copy of
that. That'd be great. Thank you.
Of what I can make out of my scribbles.
And that may well also be in the commission's final report. I don't know whether it is or not. Thanks.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Marna Schwartz, and like Ricky, I'm also here representing the Oil Reform Alliance. And Ricky pretty much covered a lot of the things. I'm just going to pick up on one area and just be a little bit more specific about it. And that's the area I'm real concerned about is Section 1 of SB 504, in which the applicant for an oil discharge contingency plan must be able to, as on page 2, lines 21 through 23, rapidly contain a realistic maximum oil discharge and to remove that discharge in the shortest possible time, and also be prepared, as on page 3, lines 1 through 5, to deal with the release within the shortest possible time after discharge, and that the applicant properly implements the oil discharge contingency plan. As others have asked over the course of these hearings, I too am perplexed by the language in this section. What is a realistic maximum oil discharge, and how long is the shortest possible time? These terms are vague and indefinite, leaving the contents of oil discharge contingency plans open to controversy and deliberation. In order to make the bill as clear as possible for both the regulatory agency and the industry, it is imperative to require that the oil discharge contingency plan for a vessel or facility prepare for total discharge of contained oil. As Mr. Asplund pointed out last night, if you don't pre-plan, you can't make good rational decisions. Good rational decisions need to be made when the next catastrophic oil spill occurs. Furthermore, this pre-planning needs to be used, as in the language of House Bill 321, a bill currently in Senate Labor and Commerce. It is crucial that this plan be implemented immediately. And that's the language used in that bill, immediately. According to 4604030, oil terminal facilities, offshore oil exploration facilities, and tankers and barges involved with the transfer of oil cannot operate within the state without an approved oil discharge contingency plan. It seemed as though there were references made last night to situations where this was not the case. Is this true that there are as many as 50 vessels and facilities currently operating which are in violation of this statute? Does the state need the help of its citizens in order to ensure that its resources are protected? Do we need legislation like HB 558, which allows the public to sue industries that are in violation of the laws which protect our natural resources? And that bill was introduced by Representative Copeland. As I brought up in my testimony on SB 359 before this committee last week, the Exxon Valdez disaster helped make the citizens of this state aware of the true costs of oil development. Our sustainable resources need to be protected in order to ensure Alaska's future economic stability. Oil spills are not acceptable. Alyeska's plan, which, and I quote Patty Epler in an article of February 27, 1990 in the Anchorage Daily News, can't guarantee complete containment and cleanup of any spill, forces the state to reconsider the cost of oil transport. Again, I appreciate the committee's willingness to look at these bills and also your willingness to stay through all this testimony, and hope that you all help to pass strong language to ensure the healthy future of the state. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Marnie. Is there anyone else in Juneau who wants to testify tonight? Okay, with that, we will close the initial public hearings on Senate Bills 468, 503, and 504 before the Senate Oil and Gas Committee. I have polled the members of the committee. There will not be a quorum next Monday night, so we will not have a meeting Monday as was previously scheduled. We will, however, have a meeting Wednesday, and we hope that we can have Mr. Walt Parker, chairman of the Oil Spill Commission, and at least a couple of the other members of the commission with us that evening to talk with us about their feelings about the bills and some suggestions that they may have and some questions that the committee has for them. So that's the plan for next Wednesday night. We need to confirm that with Mr. Walt Parker and the other members, and that will confirmation will come out on the schedule this coming Thursday. With that, I'll close the meeting, and I appreciate everyone's willingness to stay with us this evening through the testimony. It's been excellent. Thank you.